Hello and welcome everyone to this week's episode of Double DM Podcast, where today we will be talking about finding your niche as a game master, creating and carving out that niche, and making your games your own the way you want them to be played, to be made, to be enjoyed. But first, as every week, I have to ask my co-host Niels how he is doing today. So Niels, how are you?
I'm great. Can't wait to record and having fun with you as every week. I hope it will be as every week.
Yeah, sure. I don't know why you think not.
Because there weren't that many pre-recording shenanigans as usual. I mean, there were, but not the soundboard didn't get involved, and that's why I'm a bit
curious. Oh, yeah, the soundboard isn't loading in Zencastr.
Ah, okay. That explains it. Good. Then I'm great. So great, yeah. But how about you? How are you?
I am doing good. Pretty knocked down still, mm-hmm. You could say. Yeah, everything hurts. Everything is aching, but I'm surviving.
Kendo, right?
Yes, Kendo.
Yeah.
Where I also had the Berlin Single Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Made it to the round of 32 before I got knocked out, unfortunately. So with that, I made it to spot 20 mm-hmm. out of roughly 40 people.
All right.
There wasn't a round of 32 for everyone. There was only a few of those, and I got drafted into one and lost that one.
All right, that's good. Congratulations, right? Do we say congratulations then?
Yes, we do. Yeah. I did good.
I just watched you, okay? I just saw you bonking people over the head with a sword, okay? That's all I saw.
Yeah, I just bonked people over the head with a sword. That's entirely correct.
Yeah, and that's about all I understand about this sport. It looks fun and interesting and is really loud.
Yeah.
But a couple of friends and I who watched were still trying to figure out how points are scored. And I think we got the gist of it.
Okay. I can't remember.
But during the event, we had different theories. Apparently, some were kind of true after you told us how points were scored. So, yeah.
Well, thing for a strike in Kendo, for a point in Kendo to occur, is you need a key Kentaichi. That is the combination of, first of all, the will and spirit to actually kill or at least hit your enemy. Second, you need to hit the person in the right spot. So I actually need to strike you. I don't just need the will to do it. I actually have to do it. What a surprise. And I also have to move forward, or at least mentally move forward and want to hit them and signify that you hit them by making the sound. And the thing is, in Kendo, you make three different kinds of sounds.
Mm-hmm.
The one with your foot, the one with your sword, and the one with your mouth.
Yeah.
And those three sounds need to be at the same time.
Okay.
I can't just scream at you, hit you, and then stomp the ground. I need to, as I'm hitting you, stomp the ground, pushing myself forward through yourself, through your dead body, and in the same moment begin screaming. The thing is, the key Kentaichi is the combination that all of these three things happen at the same time. The one moment of strike, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
The one moment where I hit you is the perfect moment. That is what Kendo is. It's all about perfecting that moment where I hit you. And yeah, that's the thing. That's when you score points. Obviously, there's a bit of leeway. I can't just hit you, move through you, and then begin screaming.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has to look like I am actually doing the thing, doing it all at the same time.
Yeah.
And when you do that, which isn't necessarily too hard once you learn how to do everything at once, then you just always do it. And then it just becomes a lot about how are you able to strike the person, right? My first fight was against a very, very lovely person who had the very sad biological disadvantage against me that she is 40 centimeters smaller than me,
mm-hmm.
which gave me a good chance to hit her more easily. Now, the thing is, there is no height or weight or age or any restriction in Kendo, because she had a way to win. And that would have been when she made it so that I am unable to hit her, because my biological disadvantage is that I am big. And not talking about my mass, which is also a biological disadvantage, you could say, and an advantage at the same time. But I'm also 40 centimeters taller than her. I'm also roughly a foot or even 1 foot and 3 inches taller than her, meaning that while I at normal range, I have an advantage to strike her. But if she instantly moves into her range, I am out of my range. She is too close. If she moves too close, I literally cannot hit her.
Okay,
but so she can, because her arms are smaller.
That was another theory we had while watching, was because we, after you explained it has to be this, this, and this at the same time, and these things have to matter, we watched a couple of fights and saw some of the hits, but where they weren't points. And then maybe you have to hit with a certain part of the sword. And now we have the confirmation for that. Okay, good to know.
With a normal sword, anything of that side would have been blades, so any hit would have killed. But a shinai is...
Yeah.
If I hit you with the far end of my sword, it won't hurt as much as if I hit you with the short end of my sword. Because just of lever. Physics levers. If I hit you with the broad side, more or less, or with the very short end of my sword, those that are strong enough and would hit you with the short end of the sword, they would be strong enough to just knock a person out. Kendo is also still a Japanese sword fighting skill. It's not about just trying to win the fight. So yeah, theoretically, you could also disarm your opponent. You could strike the shinai out of their hand and then just shove it away outside the ring, for example. You could do that. It wouldn't be outright forbidden, but it's just not good sportsmanship.
Yeah.
Like, I could also just pull out a gun and shoot you. Yeah, sure. I can. I
parry this, you filthy casual. Like, Alan Kablam.
There's a very easy way to do it.
Yeah, but it's still a sport and not a fight for life and death. That's the thing. In an actual fight, nobody gives a shit.
It was very great. I had a lot of fun. It was a great day. But we're still a TTRPG podcast. So, Niels, did you have any TTRPG sessions in the last few weeks?
Yeah, I did. We had one together. And then I had one other session last Sunday. Which one do you want to start with?
The first one.
Okay, that was the Masks one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we played Masks in this West Marcher style campaign. Emil talked about it before, I think, with another group that he GM'd for. But this time I was a player at that table.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I had a lot of fun. There was some kind of explosions going on in the government district. We, as a team of teenage superheroes, were basically first responders. And yeah, trying to find the reason or the person behind all these explosions and trying to stop them and find the reason why all of this has happened while still dealing with our own shit was really fun for me. I enjoyed that. And just the interactions between our heroes and how we interacted with the world and what we could do, how we flavored that, how we described that, and how we work together, I think it was amazing. It wasn't perfect by any means in terms of teamwork strength, because it was the first time we were on a mission together. So that makes sense as well. It was just a very fun and entertaining session for me. I hope it was for you too. I hope you had a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of fun.
So yeah, that was the mask session. Can't wait for the next one.
Yeah.
I'm hyped.
Whenever it will be.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of that campaign, that can happen here and there and blah, blah, blah. Whenever there's time, whenever everyone is ready or some of us are ready and want to engage with that. Fun stuff. Very fun stuff. The next one was the session where we both were players. Our kind of magical investigator squad. Called Das Magie. Weird German funny ha 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 acronym. Why are you shaking your head?
Because I hate the name.
Yeah, it's different. Let's just say it like that. I fully stand behind that. But yeah, my character tried to bullshit our way through a deal to get some information that we desperately need. There was a deal with a crime lord on the table, but we as magical investigators and basically police thing, but not really police thing, try to get to the information, but without making a shady deal with a crime lord, because that was just, maybe not the best idea.
Just wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, but since we desperately needed the information that this person could potentially provide, my character tried to fake the artifact that the Scrime Lord was looking for. I hope I did a good job. I mean, the roles were good. So let's see if that convinced him. But that's what we'll have to find out next time. But the session ended with that we were being followed right after the meeting.
Yes.
So my hopes aren't that high, but they're still there.
The thing is, I had a plan myself that as a lesson for TTRPG players, right? If you have a cool plan, but another one of your players is currently initiating a cool plan, just let them have their cool plan, because I had another cool plan myself.
Oh, damn.
For the same meeting.
Okay.
And that would have been, okay, we make the meeting. The only problem was that he wanted to speak alone, which was a problem for me. My plan would have included someone helping me hold him down, because my wizard has the modify memory spell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would have cast a modify memory on him, make him think that the meeting went the way that he just agreed to give us the information without us stealing the thing.
You wanted to gesture him.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would have been my idea. So I was like, that is a cool plan. I want to do that. But at the same time, I saw, okay, no, Niels with his artificer is currently doing something. That is a plan that can't be done the same way my plan can. So I'm just going to let him do his stuff and wait for my moment elsewhere, because we still have I still have enough moments where I could still use the spell.
Yeah, and the thing is, if my plan fails, your plan can still work.
Yeah, exactly. That's my plan would have failed, your plan could have still worked.
Right? Yeah.
The thing is, as a lesson for TTRPG players, if you see someone else doing something cool and having their moment, while you want to have your moment too, it is okay to take a step back. Sharing the spotlight, stuff like that, but also just letting other people execute their plans. That's where it's at. That was very fun, and I was very much enjoying what you did.
Thank you. I was too. And so, I think a crafting roll of 32 is good. It's pretty good.
I think it is okay enough.
But yeah. So yeah, those were those two. And then I was a player in another session on Sunday. The past couple of weeks, no game mastering for me. Just playing.
Okay.
Very interesting. A session that we haven't played in a long time, roughly 4 to 5 months for a campaign.
Ooh, okay.
Because there were these shenanigans that I told you about with that group. And then, yeah, let's try different systems in January. So we tried one, then put that off into February and some into March. But then we started my campaign again. What they wanted to badly finish the arc of my campaign first before switching to another, because it was just a tense and fun situation. So here we are 4 to 5 months later. Oh, wait, no, actually it's about 5 to 6 months. Yeah, 5 to 6 months later. Here we are, and we got two new characters were introduced, because in the meantime, in the past half year, we gained two new players at our table. So we had to the GM had to find a way to introduce new characters, two new characters at this time. And we did that, had a fun character introduction session, letting each other know the other characters at the table and just including them in the group and trying to share what our plan actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, fun shit. Nothing extraordinary happened because, hey, we just basically just talked. But yeah.
And that's what matters.
Exactly. Can't wait for the next session when Wind is going to pick up. And since it was the first session with this character that I played for, that I didn't play for half a year, it all took us some time to get into character again. But
yeah.
It's just what it is.
I can
next
imagine.
Next time, next Sunday, it's going to be a bit more fluent, I suppose.
We hope for it.
Yeah. But that were my TTRPG weeks.
Okay. I think with that, we've talked enough and need to get into our episode on carving out your niche and finding your niche and making sure that you play the games you want to play. We will see you after our break. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Homie and the Dude and their new Kickstarter, The Wandering Tavern. Just like their last Kickstarter, Sky Sephiroth, they will deliver incredible content for you to get immersed in a new and unique location inspired by the works of Studio Ghibli, full with plot hooks, mystery, threats, and everything else you will need for a campaign of your favorite TTRPG. packed into this one system-agnostic location. Included in this Kickstarter are 15 giant battle maps, 33 NPCs ready to be used, 30 different engaging and interesting plot hooks, 18 new magical items ready and waiting for your players, and 13 setting-themed recipes, new mechanics, and a whole of world-building features for you to use. The Wandering Tavern is 100% human-created with absolutely no AI involvement. So if you're convinced like me, check the link in the description for the Kickstarter and go right ahead and back today. And I will see you in the Wandering Tavern. Hey listener, how are you enjoying the show so far? Tell us about it in whatever way you see fit. Go to our social media pages and add us or DM us about your favorite episode of the show. We would love to hear from you on what impact our show might have had on your home games. Or you could review us on your podcast app of choice and leave us a nice message with a 5-star review. And if you want to go above and beyond, bring a friend into the fold. Tell them about our show and refer us to them so they can get a piece of the pie as well. Thank you for listening to DM and joining us on this incredible journey. So Niels, I've been a part of a conversation recently about new GMs and especially, right, someone GMing anew in an already established bigger group of people.
Okay.
So to say it like that, my wider range of people I could play TTRPGs with are roughly 30 friends, 30 people. On my personal server where my campaigns are hosted, there are 17 people in there that I could basically hit up to play at any time.
Yeah.
Then there is also friend groups of other friends that I could more or less tap into, asking those friends to play. Hey, do you also have someone else from your group that wants to play? And then I can get basically a rough range of like 30 people to play.
Yeah.
And it's great that between these 30 people, all kinds of different groups are forming, and we basically have our own little community going on privately offline, more or less.
Yeah.
And basically in that group, there was the discussion of when someone starts anew as a GM, how do they make sure that they develop their own style and are not just copying the other people's GMs that are already GMing? How can you, in that community of people, become a GM for yourself? And well, the first step obviously is you have to start GMing again.
Exactly.
You have to just say, okay, people, I have a game planned. I 4 or 5 spots. Let's go. Let's play together. Right? That is always your first step. You need to have the courage to game master. But then you need to find a way to be the game master you want to be and the game master you can be.
Exactly.
And the game master I am is not the game master Niels is. The game master I am, the game master Niels, the game master Ellie is from DM. We are all 3 different people.
Yes.
All other GMs that I have on this server, which there are 2 more of, they are different people. They GM differently. Everyone GMs differently. But how do you, when you start out, figure out where you are, what your GM strengths are? That is what I want to talk about today.
The first thing that just instantly came to my mind is, don't give a fuck about that at first and just start playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at first you have to find your own style and you want to find your own style. But in doing so, you have to try different things. But at first you have to start somewhere. And so the first thing is, don't give a fuck about styles at first and start playing to get a hang of how GMing in general just works, what you have to think of and what not, and test out some things. And then you can start to compare or find things that you might like in games that you've played in as a player or heard in some actual player or in any other type of medium or that you just think could be fun. But the first step is, don't give a fuck and just start and then try out different new things.
Yeah. I feel like there are more or less 3 steps to this. And the first is obviously the starting phase, finding your niche first. And for that, the first thing you need to do is play.
Yeah.
However, from what you said right now, I do want to say that I still think, even though it is always said, and it is true when everyone says, do not compare yourself to other people when playing or when doing stuff, because it won't lead to good things if you only compare yourself to other people, especially if those people are having unreachable standards for what you are currently able to do. As a new GM, you're not going to be better than someone that has done this for 20 years.
Yeah.
That is just most of the time not the case. Except if that person that you're comparing yourself to didn't learn a thing in their 20 years, you're not going to be the best GM at the get. But that's okay. However, I still think that comparing yourself to others in a healthy manner is a good thing.
Exactly.
Where we always say you shouldn't compare yourself to others. Other people are different. And yeah, everyone has different situations. And you shouldn't go out of your way and say, this other person is GMing way better than me. All the players are having way more fun than when they are at my tables. I'm not as good as them. That is wrong. But going, okay, they do this way, I do that same thing a different way, why do they do it that way?
Exactly.
That is a good thing to ask yourself, because you understand, you learn, you analyze what is happening around you. You try to think of stuff more critically, right? The thing is that the term of media literacy and media analysis, it fits kind of in a weird spot for TTRPGs, because you are, you kind of can analyze a session as you're playing it, same as when you watch a movie, you can analyze it and say, okay, this thing means this, and this thing I interpret this way, and we can have discussions about the movie later. The same goes for a TTRPG session, even though you're more and more experiencing it and building it as you go, right? But you can still find patterns, you can still analyze what is happening and still figure out why something is good. Not just because it is fun, but why is it fun? Why does it work? You can figure that out as you play.
Exactly. And I think that is step 1.5, so to say, because after you've cleared that hurdle of starting to GM and doing it for the first time, so you now have a foundation basically on how GMing itself works. Yeah, I have to getting to know that. Yeah, I have to play all these different NPCs, and I have to create and plan and or improvise the reaction of the NPCs or the world to the actions of my players. Once you got that down after the first time GMing, then you can start to see, oh, okay, in the game that I played a couple of weeks ago with this GM, they did something in that regard that I really liked. Why did I like that? Why did it work? And then start to analyze different patterns or different styles for the things that you enjoyed most. And then try to incorporate these things into your own game. There again, having the hurdle to try out something new. After you've played the first time, you get comfortable with it, with the quote-unquote normal style, although there isn't such a thing as normal style because everyone has their own thing. But after you've have the basics, then analyzing analyzed what you liked in other games, and then you have this one thing that is really important, trying these things out in your own game and see if they work for you.
Yeah.
Because especially in TTRPGs, and this is the thing in comparison to other mediums, when you analyze a movie, you can definitely say, yeah, I like that, this is that, and so on and so forth. But in a TTRPG, you can say, yeah, I like the way that this is done, but once you do it yourself, it might feel different because you're not only consuming the medium, but creating it at the same time.
Yeah.
So experiencing a certain GMing style or a branch of GMing style might be fun, but it might not be fun for you to recreate it or in a similar way present it. And that's something that you have to find out through trial and error. Analyze different aspects of a game and try to incorporate it into your own game and then see if they work for you. Because just if they work on paper doesn't mean they have to work for you in play itself. And that's something to keep in mind and not necessarily force yourself to do something in that regard just because you as a player liked it, but as a GM can't get yourself to really incorporate it and have fun at the same time. That's something to keep in mind of, that's totally fine. To enjoy something, to consume, but not to create it in the same manner.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. Coming to that analyzing more and more, right? The first step is to play. And you cannot get any better without playing. But you can definitely figure out what type of GM and what type of games you want to run before you even start. You might have played a D&D campaign with your friends and you're like, that doesn't feel like the game for me. Some people might say, well, no, the game is perfect. You can play any game, D&D with every GM and blah, blah, blah. Maybe the GM wasn't right for you. It doesn't matter. If someone goes, okay, this was fun. The idea is super great and I want to do this too, but something didn't feel right. You need to figure out what didn't feel right. Was it that there was too much combat? Was it that there is too much, that there is not enough direction? Was it that your certain itch for mystery and secrecy wasn't scratched or something? All of these different things, you can figure that out and you need to really reflect on what was missing for you on your experience to figure out what you want to do. Same goes with if you have a session that you're running as a game master, for example, and you go, okay, that was a great session. I really loved that. That was my best session yet. Why? Why was it your best session? Recently, I've had a session in my Phantoms game. After that, I went, wow, that was really, really freaking fun. Because the players, they are in this castle of a baron. They are in the castle of a count, of a county right now. And they know one of the people here is a traitor. Mm-hmm. They didn't know who yet. But it became increasingly more obvious that the court mage is probably the traitor.
Okay.
That he is doing something, that he's trying to control everything, that he's trying to sow seeds of distrust and stuff like that. And then a very big court arrived. 20 different noble families arrived at the court and they had a big banquet.
Mm-hmm.
And the players set their plan in motion. And it was 2 hours when they set their plan in motion and did the stuff. And I basically threw them something and they reacted instantly with their plan and did something risky. 2 hours of an intense moment, of intense moments, several after the other, after I went, okay, now this first person gets up and leaves the room. The players go, oh shit, we need to follow them. But we need to split up. But at the same time, we are watched by the guards because we have done stuff in the past that made us very suspicious to the count and everyone on his advisor board, more or less. So we need to be careful. So, right, we drop a fork under the table and we cast invisibility under the table and then we disappear and run after that person, stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the wizard leaves. Okay, we need to follow him to his secret lab. We know he has a secret lab, we just don't know where it is yet. We need to find the secret lab. So they follow him, invisible, or one of them follows invisible into the secret lab of the wizard and suddenly is trapped in there with the wizard. With the wizard trapped in there. And then the portal opens a second time and they do a split second decision to run out to get to safety again so that their invisibility doesn't drop in the secret lab. And then they rushed back to the meeting hall using their sending stone to tell the other players, yes, we have found the secret lab. Now you need to convince the count to drink the suspicious potion that we have that is a scrying spell in fluid form, more or less. Then in that second where that character sends the sending spell message and the others received, another character that is also outside the halls sees the wizard walking back to the meeting hall already. He couldn't have gotten there. No time. There was no time. There was no place for him to be there. So intense moment after intense moment after intense moment after intense moment. And I was really going, damn, that was a fun session. I had so much fun laughing with my players. And then those intense moments, really seeing in my players' eyes that they were stressed, they were trying to their best to finish what they wanted to do, that they want to get the answers that they are so desperately seeking. And I was like, that is a great session. And when I have that feeling, I know that that session was exactly where I want to be as a game master. That is exactly what I want to do. It is where I have the most fun. That is my GM style. And my GM style, I would, if you had to put it into words, and it's very hard to put stuff into words sometimes, I like to be a mystery intrigue DM. I like to be a mystery GM that runs games with tense plot twist dramatic moments while then giving a lot of time between those moments to let them sink in and my players act. For some people this might sound like a very specific description. For other people this might sound very, very broad. That depends on what type of GM you are and how you view GMing in yourself. But that is how I would describe what I do mostly. My sessions are mostly focused around having points where I push dramatic tense moments on my players and make them act and take risks. And between those moments, I just have some kind of path ahead, not much more. Okay. I like to put my players into mysterious situations where they have to keep guessing for the right answer or make educated, informed guesses or based on information around them to get what they want.
Yeah, I can see that.
Titan's Call is a very good example of this. Titan's Call is all about finding out what is actually happening in the world around you right now while being chased, more or less, by titans.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're not really chasing you. But these titans...
Are they? Or are we chasing the titans?
I am saying this for Titan's Call. The titans are a plot device of pure tense moment. They are my final resort that I can always rely on to say, boom, I've just raised the stakes to 1,000,000.
Yeah.
That is exactly what the titans are. They are not much more than that, in my opinion, right now. Maybe they will get to be more in future seasons. But alas, I've talked a long time now. Niels, what would you describe your GM style as?
I was just about to say, I was thinking, what I try to focus on the most is interconnectivity between plot points and characters and trying to push moral questions.
Okay.
If that makes sense. It might sound super specific again, but I like when the characters are woven into the world really, really well and tight. And I don't care if I wrote that beforehand in that regard of the world. I'm not afraid to change that at all to make it fit better and have a more integrated character into the world. And then have these backstory elements connect with the elements that will happen or happened before or are currently happening so that they always can relate back to their own things. Not necessarily always to one character, because that would be bullshit, but to all different characters in my playgroup. And at the end of it, they basically have a net of things that connect to each other with their group in the focus point. Their group is what kind of binds all of this together. That is something that I try to focus on. And with that, having moral quandaries like, one character of you wants to befriend the witch and learn from her.
Yeah.
The other wants to save the people that are suffering from this snowstorm. How do you deal with that? Both relate to your backstory because I made it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There is a connection point to both of your characters.
Yeah.
Now have that discussion.
Yeah.
That's something that I really, really, really enjoy.
I can see that. I can see that. You did a good thing of that in Nestorian Sea, by the way.
Thank you.
In Nestorian Sea, we didn't necessarily have backstories. You still had basically a very good read on the character or that we've played and could use stuff that would make us basically split the party on a moral level. Which was very great. As you can see, formulating what you want to do as a game master is something that I really advise you to do out there.
Yeah.
Sit down, write down a few sentences or one sentence of this is who I am as a GM. This is who I am as a game master. You can do the same thing for a player and then figure out what that means. What do you do? And this will help you in so many different aspects. It really helps. You can change your entire way you prep around this. So if I want to push dramatic tense moments on my players, every time I feel like there's some kind of lull in conversation, more or less, and it feels like my players aren't going anywhere, I press a button, more or less. Or when I know my players are currently doing something, I press another button, making it harder for them to even do what they want to do or changing what they want to do. But I always have these buttons. So what do I need to do? I always need to have something prepared to push on my players.
Yeah.
For example, the thing is, I had that all of these 20 noble families arrive and basically raise the stakes that way. That was a button I pressed. My players are currently going back to the barony and going back to the castle. They have no idea what they're going to do now. They've just asked the wizard to do something for them. And now he is gone. And since this wizard is actually the culprit, he formulated a way to make sure that now more people are there in the more people are in the castle. His allies are also in the castle. So I pressed the button of, well, you guys did something that gave you the opportunity to raise the stakes. I am raising the stakes. You have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And then I can see, okay, this is how I want to do it. This is how I GM. And this is something that crystallized over years and years of practice. I started GMing in 2015 or 2014. It's nearly 10 years since I've GM'd now. My first session. And my first session, it was garbage. It was utter sewage garbage. It was bad. It was really bad. And if I would play today at my table at that time, right? If today's me would go 10 years back in time to play at that table, I would literally refuse to play at that table. Not because I don't think that that person wouldn't develop into a great GM, because he did. What a surprise, I am here. But because it was really not a good experience for me or my players. It was stressful. I didn't really know what to do in all the situations. But that is part of the process.
Yeah.
And in finding your niche, finding out what GM you are, finding out what your style is, finding out how you can make the best games you can make, you need to be bad at other games first.
Of course. If I just remember my first session, that was, I think, in 2015, so about 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking hell. But yeah, the good thing with that is everyone at the table had no clue what we were doing, because we were all new to this. But the bad thing is no one knew what we were fucking doing. So it was just a hot mess. It was just garbage. It was a fucking dumpster fire, this whole session. And as you said, I wouldn't play at that table again. Never. Yeah. By today's standards. Back then, I just enjoyed that I got the opportunity to play. That's the thing. Having the opportunity to play allows you to become the game master that you want to be. Especially when you visit it in retrospect and see how much you changed over time period X. It's amazing to relive your journey a bit, to see where it all started and where it is now. And I think that that's one way that you can try to improve the skills or the niches that you have created for yourself over a certain period of time, after you found out what you want to do and how you want to master a certain session or a certain campaign. Having yourself look over what you did before and how you changed to create that niche for yourself gives you pointers on what to improve on even more, because you know what was missing back then and what is currently present. And then you can think to yourself about, okay, but this could be the thing that adds to that a lot, or there's still one small part missing that I could add, and then so and so and so and so on, improve over time again. That's the big thing to take away here. To improve your GM style and niche to the things that you want, you need time. Don't rush yourself too much, because it just creates unnecessary stress, because we are all here to have fun and play a game. That's something to keep in mind. You want to have fun first and foremost. If you stress yourself out too much, that's garbage.
That's garbage. Yeah.
But if you take your time to develop the skills that you want to have, it's all good. And yeah, taking time. Big thing. Big thing.
Big thing. Yeah.
That was something that I have to, or had to drill into my mind, especially for GMing. And especially slapped into my face with Historia. That was a big thing that, yeah, I wanted to improve on that. But I was like, yeah, I have to improve for next session, everything. And then, no, you can do it one piece at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. You don't have to burn yourself out to be the perfect person. Take your time and everything will be all right.
Yeah. GMing is, as I've said before, I will say it again, it is a type of art form.
Yeah.
You are creating art at the table for your players, with your players. It takes time to learn and be good at it. You can look to other people for what they do and what you want to do the same, and you want to do the same thing as them. One of the things is always negatively talked about is the Matt Mercer effect, or the Critical Role effect, which, yeah, I'm going to say it, it is kind of a thing. It is a thing. You have this very giant media company that is the one gateway drug into the medium right now. It is gonna have an effect that people that come through this gateway drug are gonna expect a certain kind of play. Now, the thing is, a thing that you should have learned through Critical Role too is that every table is different. Every table is only as good as the sum of their parts and people playing together, and it's all about communication. You need to lower your, not lower your expectations. That is the wrong word to say. You need to change your expectations that every table is like Critical Role. Critical Role, even though there's discourse about Critical Role being scripted, I'm gonna say the thing is, I don't give a fuck if it is scripted or not. It is a curated experience because it is an actual play.
Yeah.
It is curated for an audience, and for a big audience at that. the effect behind that, the Matt Mercer effect and the critical role effect, is that people will expect a certain kind of play. It's not bad to expect that certain kind of play. It is a good thing to have certain expectations coming into the games. When I have my session zeros, I run through people through an expectation question round where I ask, okay, what is your expectation for this game? What is your expectation for me as a game master? What is your expectation for yourself as a player? What do you expect from this game? So we all can discuss what we are actually doing here, why we're here to have fun, what we're doing and how we can have fun. And in that instance, if someone says, I've watched all of Critical Role and I really like that, so I would like to do that. And someone goes, okay, I have never watched Critical Role. What is that? And then we can discuss, okay, Critical Role is an actual play where they play D&D in a very improv-heavy actor-style format, more or less. And then we can discuss what we can do with that. Yes, there will be a lot of role play in my campaigns. I will feature a lot of dramatic moments for character development, right? That is the style of Critical Role. And if someone explains to me that they want that, I can make sure I can put it into my games, right? Because the thing about carving your niche out as a GM is not being insistent on playing your way. It is figuring out what things you do best while GMing a normal game. A game is still played with other people, and you need to know what these people want and do in their games. So even though you might have the most fun in your certain type of game, it can be that other people might have different opinions, and their opinions are just as valid as yours. And if they're playing at your table, you will have to find a consensus of a campaign that all of you enjoy.
Exactly.
And that is also part of finding your niche. You should make sure that the table you play with, the table you have right now, is actually playing within your niche or is comfortable with your niche. So you can do your dramatic, tense character development moments where the player that also likes combat a lot gets their combat. You can combine the two. You just need to know that they like combat. Then you can adapt your style to the game that you're currently playing. You're still playing a game at the table with the people in front of you. Your niche is always changing depending on the table you play at. You need to be cognizant of that.
And I think especially in the beginning, when you found your niche, it's a lot of what you feel comfortable with, obviously. It's your comfort zone. We talked about this in previous episodes, but you, at some point, you have to step out of your comfort zone. And that's exactly what you have or what you do when you manage expectations in session zero. See what everyone at the table likes and then include your comfort zone into that, into these expectations, because you are a player at the table as well. Just because you're the GM doesn't mean that you're not a player, because you play the game as well. So your comfort has a place and is needed at the or in the discussion as well. And then you can see how you can combine those, because obviously you feel most home in your comfort zone. Obviously, that's, you just feel comfortable. That's why it's called the comfort zone. Ta-da. Stepping out of it can be scary at some points, but the longer you play in your comfort zone, the more comfortable you are with your own niche and your skills, the more comfortable you get to combine certain niches, certain aspects of games to create maybe a new niche that you found for yourself. Because that's one thing that I learned through 9 years of game mastering is your niche can change as you, the person, change.
It will change.
Just because you once you have your style, you try to combine it with different things to incorporate more and more and more into your game so everyone enjoys the game and the time that they spent there. And then you just say, hey, that's something awesome. Let's keep that.
Yeah.
Now this is my comfort zone. You combine that with something else or subtract something for the benefit of something else. And then it changes again and again and again. And that's the thing. Everyone changes their style over the course of their quote-unquote career of GMing just because they have different people at the table or even the same people that change, or your personal life quote-unquote forces you to change, because you get, you become a new person or a different person over a time period.
You will Yeah, you will enjoy different media. You will find new things to obsess over. You will find new people to play with. You will find new games to play. And this is something that is also important to mention. If you've done the step of writing down what you do as a GM, figure out what game to play, figure out what people to play with, because it will be the best thing if you find people that enjoy the same thing that you're best at or that you like to do as a game master. So sure, you can play D&D for your heavy mystery intrigue campaign. You can do that. I'm going to give you the permission to do that. At the same time, I'm going to ask you, why do you not want to play a different game? If there is a good explanation of, I just like D&D, I don't have time to read other systems, if that is in the wider space of TTRPGs, in the discourse space, is accepted as a valid answer doesn't matter. You are your own game master. You are your own person. You can make your own decisions. You're adult enough. This is a, right. You're old enough to make your own decisions on that. And I'm just here to say that if you have a certain style, find ways to make that style pop even more. Hone that craft. If your style is a lot about NPCs and intrigue dialogue and plot twists in that certain interpersonal relationships, maybe find a game that has actual rules and mechanics attached to those interpersonal relationships. D&D doesn't have that. It doesn't. It is okay that it doesn't have that, because D&D is not a game for that. It is never intended to be that game. You can still play your game in D&D, but you can also play a different TTRPG altogether and use a different rule set that will maybe help you make your style, your niche, even better. And you do that through exploring. And this is the thing, right? You have your niche, you have your comfort zone, you need to step out of it. You need to say yes to opportunities when other people ask you to play different TTRPGs with them. Say yes, play with them, understand games with them.
Yeah, or not just different systems, but say yes to be a player in a different campaign of the same setting or the same system that you're running, just to see how that GM does the thing that you want to hone, that you want to improve on, and maybe find something that you like, just a little detail, and then add that. Or listen to an actual play, although keep in mind, actual plays are different than normal play.
It is a curated experience.
Exactly.
No matter how many people say, well, our actual play is just friends sitting around a table, they are still having a microphone in the way. They are probably still at least doing some editing, and they're making sure that their experience is palpable for an outside perspective.
Exactly. But you can still find little details in the GM style that you like and try to complement that with your own style. And mix and match different things out from different mediums to increase your mastery over that certain aspect that you want. And it doesn't even have to be TTRPGs necessarily. Mm-hmm. It can be story writing in general, book writing, movie scripts, or descriptions from through sound, pictures, or whatever. Whatever you want your niche to be, you can engage so many different mediums to draw from and therefore increase your craft. Because, hey, I like interconnectivity between things. So I look at how some certain writers that I enjoy reading do that. Maybe they have some sort of document or a TED Talk or whatever on how their writing process works. And then I can steal something from that and make it my own. Or look at a certain movie and see how they reveal those connections. Mm-hmm. And maybe take that and put it into my TTRPG game. Or play in a TTRPG game and see and ask the GM, hey, how do you come up with your connections? How do you reveal them? And then we can have a discourse about that.
Yeah.
It's not forbidden. I encourage it to ask people.
Yeah.
If you want to know something about my GM style, please go ahead and ask me how I do it.
Literally.
And then I can say, hey, yeah, my notes are a dumpster fire and I just make it up on the fly, but it's still, you got the information that you wanted.
Yeah.
Not the one that you needed, but the one that you wanted.
GMing is a form of art and we can help each other. This is why Double DM exists. This is why other TTRPG shows, talk shows like Roleplay Chat or How Not to DM, Three Black Halflings. These are shows where discussions and talks and discourse take place, because talking to each other as game masters about stuff helps understanding how we can run our games. This is the whole point of Double DM. You're listening to this, and even though you might not listen to our advice, you hear other people talking about TTRPGs. You will form your own opinions. You will form your own ideas, and you will be a better game master for it. Same goes with understanding that we might think the same way you do, and this encourages you to do more of the stuff that you think about, because, hey, we've done that too, so why not do it yourself as well? It worked for us. Will work for you, maybe. We don't know. But, right? So we've talked about finding your niche, which is a process. It might be very easy. You can, even before you start GMing, write down what you want to do, because you've watched extra plays. You've listened to a lot of stuff. You've listened to Double DM for 150 episodes. You know what you want to do. You have ideas. You have great ideas. Now you have got them onto paper. You have started GMing and you want to hone your craft. How do you make sure that you get better at the stuff you're already good at?
Do it and in retrospect, analyze it.
Yeah.
do the thing and look after you've done the thing. Did it work? Did it not work? And then ask yourself why for both outcomes. Mm-hmm. Did I achieve what I wanted to achieve with mm-hmm. that? Yes. Okay, why did it work? Cool, then I'll take these notes under yes, that's why it worked, and implement them in the next game. And if you get the answer no, ask yourself why. Take down those bullet points and make sure, or try to, exclude them from the next experience. And then fine-tune the experience for the table. That's the thing. It highly depends on the table and the players you have at your table, because every table is different. Ta-da, we already talked about that. But I think thinking critically about what you have done and analyzing what you have done is a great way to really get better at the things that you're already great at. Because mm-hmm. the better you are at a certain thing, the more small little quote-unquote mistakes or inadequacies or whatever gets noticed by you. Because you just know your shit. And the more you do that, the more you know, and so on and so forth. And the smaller details get noticed by you more and more. Through that process, you will never be perfect, because that's something more or less unreachable. But now we get into the philosophical side, but you can still try to achieve perfection.
Yeah.
You will never reach it, but you can still try, and you should if you want to.
Striving to be a better GM is part of GMing, because yeah. you're never going to be perfect, you're never going to be the best, but what you can always be is improving yourself, thinking about how you can be better, getting outside perspectives, asking your players for feedback, talking to other GMs, watching actual plays, reading Reddit, all of these stuff. They help you in analyzing all kinds of media, especially media that aligns with what you do. Now, the thing is, I don't know if Niels knows this, because this is a European thing, right?
Okay. Why wouldn't I know this if it's a European thing?
No. I don't know if you know it.
Okay.
But
okay.
The Nickelodeon show Das Haus Anubis.
Yeah, obviously.
It is a thing that is European produced. It is a production in Belgium. It was mm-hmm. produced in Belgium. I don't know if it's actually ever been released in the United States or where most of our listeners are, but it is a mystery teen sleuthing TV series of teenagers going to a school, living in a house that is somewhat cursed, full of mystery and secrets,
yeah.
and kind of tied to Egyptian mythology and
good
stuff
TV
like that.
Good TV show.
I've recently am rewatching
nice.
A very old TV show, this TV show, mm-hmm. because it is where my love for mystery and secrecy and that type of storytelling kind of started.
Awesome.
It is, yeah. And going to places where you can get inspiration, and not just inspiration, but also analyze the media that you're consuming, right? You go to, and yeah, the thing is, go to other TTRPG sessions. That is the best way. Mm-hmm. Be a player at other people's tables, especially if those people GM outside your comfort zone, for example, outside your niche. You might learn a lot from them, because they GM a completely different way, and you say, oh my god, that combat felt so great. And then you go to the GM and say, why was your combat so great? Can you give me your secret? And the GM goes, because this, this, and this. And then you go, okay, I really like that. Okay, I'm gonna try that. Oh fuck, that fucking works for me as well. Damn. Cool. Now I learned something. Easy.
Yeah.
Right? But the first step is always realizing your niche. The second step is trying to play to your niche, finding a group, finding a game, finding a way to GM to make your niche good, and then improving on your niche. And now the fourth thing is, obviously, since you're playing a game with different people and you're playing a plot and storyline, you might get into places where your GM style isn't needed, right? Your GM style is very high fantasy and you love explanations of cool fucking magic phenomena and mystery, but then your players have fight a dragon and you're not really combat focused. You don't like it. You want to get over this over quick. You need to get through it. The part of having your niche is also knowing what is not part of your niche. And you need to be ready to run that as well. Because
yeah.
TTRPGs are unexpected. And that is one fact you need to know. TTRPGs are always kind of unexpected and somewhat unpredictable. So you need to be prepared for everything. Even when within your niche, you are best prepared. Right? You can be prepared for everything by doing your niche. For example, my intense drama moments. I have some of those prepared for every session. And I have a normal plan for that session. So I have a recap. I have, okay, this is definitely going to happen. This might happen. This will probably not happen. This will only happen next time, so I can set it up. But I also have these drama moments that I can always push in. but I still have a plan for the session, regardless of how it goes. Because
exactly.
You need to be somewhat prepared for everything.
That's the thing. Just because you have a niche doesn't mean you should only concentrate on your niche. That comes natural, more or less. What I found out during my time, during my niche building, is that the connectivity and moral quandaries that I like to do comes more or less natural in my world building and seeing how my characters want to interact with the world. But creating that mystery is tough for me. So I can focus more on creating mystery, for example, when a session calls for it, because mm-hmm. I don't need to think that hard about connectivity or moral quandaries anymore, because that just works. I can work more intensely on the things that are out of my comfort zone, but need to happen because the story or the situation calls for it. I can switch my focus to that a bit more. And that's something that I have to do because I'm not good at these certain types of session or whatever, right? Mm. That's something that you have to keep in mind. These things can still happen in your game and should happen in your game, because otherwise it gets one-dimensional real quick if it's always just the same mm-hmm. shit over and over and over again.
Yeah, 100%, right? And yeah, right, you have your niche, you have written down everything, you have found the perfect group, you have found the game, you have been improving, you found the way to make sure that you can run every session comfortably while in your style, while in your zone. And again, important thing to say at the end, don't be afraid of change.
Exactly.
Your groups will change, your games will change, you as a person and everyone at your table will change. It is important to understand that over years of play, your games and your preferences will change. And that is why you should evaluate from time to time what you're doing. And if what you're doing is perfect for you, if that is great, if you're having fun, and if that is all true and good, perfect. But if you think, okay, I want to do something else, I want to do something new, then that something else is what you should do. And I'm encouraging you to then step outside your niche and carve out a new one.
Mm.
That is... yeah, that is basically how it is. You can carve out a new niche. You can find new places. And there will always be place for you in the wider TTRPG space, because there is an infinite amount of space for you here. There is thousands of games that you could play, and you can make your own very, very simply, easily for the game you want to play. And it is very easy in this day and age to find groups.
Mm.
So the road is paved. And if you listen to this and haven't GM'd yourself yet, go out there and GM and find your niche. And if you're a GM currently thinking about what is my niche even, I know you can figure it out, and I know you can find the best place to play. 100%.
Yeah.
I think I have found them for right now, my friend group, and I'm going to play with them until that is not the case anymore.
Yeah, I can only agree. I found my niche as well, my friend group as well, my usual group. Maybe that changes, but that's just what it is. Things change over time, just like your GM style did. And with that, I don't have anything else.
I have nothing else either.
So thank you all for listening, and hear you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Double DM. It appears you liked this one, what we had to say, and our advice helped you. Why not show us how we helped you in a rating, or even write a review detailing us how we helped? You can do this on the platform that you are listening on right now. It's just a few clicks, doesn't take long, and helps us out. It gets us out there and our advice into more ears of more people. Thanks again for listening and joining us on this amazing journey. Have a great day, and see you on the next one. Bye bye.